Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm Karin Keika, also goes by Keika, Karin Aguilar San Juan. Let me first introduce who's here, and then I'll say a little bit to get us going. Larger than life on a street is our dear friend, Dharma sibling, village elder, Bushin Carol Iwata. And I'm going to give the names in the order that we're going to talk. So then we have Raul Ramos, also the board chair right now. We have Young Mua, Marcus Young, famous for Don't You Feel It Too? And Gyoku Jun, Dr. Didi Koka. Oh, it's kind of nervous to see all these people. Can we start a little bit? Like, put your hand on your heart with me. My favorite cranial hole. It keeps your head from exploding.
Does it?
It does. And if it explodes, you can just put it back together.
It exploded a long time ago.
Nice. Well, the time is going to fly by, so we have a little bit of a structure to this. We're going to each say a little something to get the ball rolling, and then we're going to popcorn and leave a little time at the end to hear from you guys. And I'm going to start by sharing with you, I made a copy for each of you because this thing has been constantly changing a little bit. It's a statement that we made, a work in progress, BIPOC version of land acknowledgement. It's really opening up a conversation about what even should this be. And I'm trying to resist the pull towards perfecting it, because if it's perfect, then we will arrive at liberation. Far from that. It's just really kind of trying to turn our attention to some important issues. So here we go. We are part of the Race, Love, and Liberation Laboratory for Growing Spiritual Things. In our lab meetings, we work closely with our guiding teacher, Sosan Flynn. Hand in hand, we uplift the BIPOC experience as it relates to Buddhism and Clouds in Water Zen Center. The label BIPOC represents a precious and precarious coalition of Black, Indigenous, people of color. We belong to planet Earth's interconnected living ecosystem, where our thoughts, speech, and actions deeply affect one another. With humility and compassion, we recognize that we are not separate from the systems and structures of violence, exploitation, settler colonialism, and white supremacy that continue to shape the nation, the region, and the bodies that we inhabit. We acknowledge and seek to better understand the ways we benefit from the genocide and displacement of Dakota and Ojibwe peoples, and from the 94 freeway that destroyed Old Rondo, a Black community. Using our BIPOC voices, we imagine and strive toward forms of kinship and collectivity that harmonize with the universe and all beings. Bushin is smiling. Okay, that's a good sign. So, we'll just start in that order. you got a sense of what we're about, but what we're about is always unfolding, so there's no point in kind of saying it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're coming here at a very propitious moment. I mean, it's spring, you're all here, it's the beginning of practice period, the birds are chirping, the dogs are pooping, just like everything's going on. So here we are to not exactly intervene, but like, you know, put ourselves in a place where box and lid fit, arrow points meet. So let's invite Bhushan. We can put the statement, we can't easily put this statement in the chat box because it's only on a paper right now. So we'll send it out somehow. Or not. Okay. Yes, please, Bhushan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I might be bigger than life on the screen in the Zendo, but I have gallery view on my Zoom because I'm a little nervous. And it's, I want to give a shout out to all the people from the BIPOC sitting group that are on Zoom today. Oh, thank you. That really gives me heart. So the topic today is, how can clouds and in water be truly a refuge for all? And when I think about refuge, one of the first things that comes to my mind is the chant of the three refuges. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, and I take refuge in the Sangha. And it's that last one that I think is challenging because it specifically calls on us to be in community. It has occurred to me that in a way, clouds and water is a refuge for many, if not all. I think there are, well, clouds and water officially calls itself a Sangha, and I think that many who practice at clouds would say that people who are affiliated with clouds and water are a Sangha. And, you know, as we know, this is predominantly a white space. And then the BIPOC sitting group calls itself a Sangha as well. And so the question then is there a way that we can build a community where we might all take refuge together? Refuge to me suggests safety, but safety is not the same as comfort. I can understand the desire for comfort. When I walked into the doors of Clouds and Water years ago, I thought I was suffering mightily and I could not wait to have something relieve my suffering. But I think that anyone who wants to stay on the comfort path of Buddhism is on a different path than I am, or I'm on a different path than they are, and I don't think that I could walk very far with them. I think Buddhism is by nature sometimes uncomfortable. The work of Zen is to examine the self. And I think that I can't just examine myself in isolation, but I also need to examine myself as I am in my in a community, and then I also need to examine the community. So just as an example, I might be able to understand the effects of racism in myself by sitting with myself, but I can't fully understand that, and I certainly can't understand the racism as a structure, as an institution, unless I examine myself in community and the community itself. So The question then for me out of that examination is, how have I and how have we contributed to treating as other anyone who is a different race or culture or gender or sexual orientation, economic status, different ability, or any of the other ways we differentiate ourselves? And on the other side of that, how can I and how can we build a community in which every person in their true self is seen and is heard, is valued, and is nurtured? So that's the kind of community I think that I could take refuge in, where we are all examining ourselves, are examining ourselves in community, and examining the communities themselves. And out of that examination, we are committed to saving all beings. And I don't just mean saving all beings in our heads, or saving all beings in the abstract, or I'm going to sit here and you go save all beings. I think we are all in this together. And we have to do this from our embodied selves. So I am hoping that I can engage in this dance with as many of you as possible. Thank you. I have spoken.
Thank you, Bhushan. Yes, and when you're then you can say, I have spoken. There's a little demon on the floor I'm watching with like numbers, and it's saying like time goes, but we want to be also in timelessness. So we're gonna work on that. And but I'm going to try to have you go in the 2 to 3 minute thing. Anyway, but whatever, we'll just see what happens. We'll talk outside with cookies and tea afterwards then. Okay. Raul Ramos?
I'll try to stay on time, and you can cut me off at any point, because I might talk longer.
Speak loud, please.
Can I? Is it okay if I take this off?
Yes.
Thank you. a monkey mind. That's what's happening right now. And it's been happening for the last couple of nights. I've had a really hard time sleeping, and monkey mind is still there. My thoughts are everywhere. My thoughts are, my daughter's leaving Puerto Rico. I'm going to speak fast, because now I feel under pressure.
No, just relax. Timeless.
My daughter's leaving Puerto Rico. This is happening there. This is all going on in my head as well. That's also, what am I going to talk about? So if it comes out jumbled, please bear with me as I try to get my thoughts together, because monkey mind is in there jumping around. Anyway, I'm going to kind of tell the story about something that happened to me in the past, and it'll make sense as we move on. Yeah, when I turned 43, my kids were graduating from high school and going to college, and at 43, I decided I'm going back to college. I just had a GED. So I went to college, and in the second year of my college, they closed the Skyways at this college, and they needed somebody to help. The program that they wanted to set up is to get people with disabilities from point A to point B while also meeting their needs, because they couldn't get through on the Skyways, which they depended on. I hired some students, and that's another story on how to put these students to work with compassion and empathy, and not with pity. So anyway, in the process, I met this young man named Eric, and Eric was a paraplegic from the waist down. He was unable to walk or anything. And him and I developed a relationship. So one day, and I had never worked with people with disabilities, so I had all assumptions and I had all thoughts about what I was going to do, and it was coming out of pity, because that's all I knew at that time. Anyway, we develop a relationship, and then one day this young man asked me to go with him to the bathroom to help him through the process of emptying his bag and using the bathroom. And at first I was like, I had hesitated. But then I said, well, that's what I'm here for. So I went and I helped him. And I, in the process, I got to know him even deeper because of this relationship that we had. And so I helped him two or three times a week, because he was on campus two or three times a week. And that really had a profound effect on who I am. So I dealt with him with a lot of compassion and empathy. And I learned to love the young man. Anyway, in the process, I can't say I ever know what it's like to be disabled from the waist down, but in the process of building this relationship and helping him, I felt what it was like to wear his moccasins and feel the unstable ground that he walked on. I felt what it was like to wear his chancletas are slippers, and the lack of support that you get from walking in chancletas. And then I felt the weight of his boots as he was trying to swim upstream just to live. So, and that's where I'm at with why I'm sitting here, is I'm asking, or I'm seeking for you folks, all of us as a community, to walk in my moccasins as a person of color and feel the pain of walking on unstable ground. To feel what it's like walking in chancletas and feeling the instability that you feel as being unstable and not getting the support that you need. Or feel the weight of what it's like to having my boots on while I'm swimming upstream on a daily basis. These are the things that I go through as a person of color. So, and as a community, if we do this together, then we can seek refuge in Buddha, we can seek refuge in Dharma, and we can seek refuge in Sangha as a community. But we have to do this together. And we're in this, as Carol said, we're in this together. And we can't do this separately. And I'm speaking to you as Raul, a person of color, not as a board chair. These are my thoughts. I have spoken.
Thank you, Raul. And now it's Yang Mua Marcus Yang. Into your bosom.
Speak to the heart.
Speak to the heart.
Sorry. It's
okay.
I think it's off.
It's off.
Oh, thank you. Boy. Good morning. I almost don't want to say anything. I feel like I could read the book that was just presented to us from Raul and Bushin and just read that every day. So, not knowing exactly what to say, I want to just offer a gratitude for... I'm normally very suspicious of words, but I really appreciated the words that Karin, you spoke as our land acknowledgement, and Dick, that you spoke earlier. In this space, I felt profoundly impacted by words that so clearly declared that this is a space for all people, and specifically naming that this practice is stewarded in this space and time by mostly white people, but that we're all here, and we're trying to find a way that we can all be here safely and deeply and with a sense of belonging. Lately, I have been feeling the falling apart of a self, of a life. Maybe it's the this time of the pandemic, it's the war, it's all these various things. And as I sat in the back today, I felt grateful for a place where one can fall apart and try to put oneself back together and to do that with other people, knowing that we see each other and we can show ourselves to each other and learn how to co-create and rebuild and acknowledge that that's a part of life is falling apart and then this regrowth. Sometimes it feels very dramatic, the falling apart, and sometimes it's just tiny shifts that we make that are still very, very deep. So lately I've also been thinking about when one leaves or runs away, when one stays, and how or when one returns. I think it was local actor and artist Kevin Kling, a writer, who once said, it struck me, it was on Being, Krista Tippett's On Being, many, many years ago, and he said, there's a time in your life when you run away from your family, and then there's a time when you run back to your family. And that stuck with me, you know, from that radio moment. And I've been working on it for quite a long time. Running away, you know, sometimes you do that to protect yourself. And sometimes you do that to find new spaces where new possibilities can emerge. And sometimes I think it was just this morning when I was thinking about it, that my own running away, like I've been in Minnesota like 35 years, I think, but I still can't quite bring myself to call it home. And there is a parallel to that, to clouds as well. I've been coming to clouds very on and off, more off than on, for the, you know, since the 90s that I can recall when I lived in Lower Town. And you know, that keeping at arm's length, that running away, I think is preemptive so that I don't have to hear someone else say to me, you don't belong. Mm-hmm. I'd rather run away first, right? To say, I don't belong. So it's easier than to have someone else say that to you. And then once in a while I see through newsletters, whether it's the Clouds newsletter or I get newsletters from a Unitarian church locally too, and I see people pass away. And I see the notice. And I imagine a community coming together to celebrate a life. And I think about that as a type of return. And I just wonder about that. So, just want to say thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Yangmu. Yokujun, Dr. Didi.
Good morning. I didn't really feel like the question of belonging has been a question that I've raised even maybe even brought me to Zen Buddhism in a strange way. I wanted my kids to belong to spiritual path. So many strange ways of how I got to clouds. Really very odd. And didn't even understand it. I Even the fact, it's this whole story. One day I'll have to tell the whole story. That's very strange. That's a lot there. But I have in these years recently been feeling that Sangha, belonging, myself, has been integrating larger, huge issues. It seems to be more integrative for me. And I think it's as I go deeper in my spiritual path, I think I see that the struggle that I don't mean it in a harsh way, but just the work of loving myself and being myself in a true spiritual path. Somehow, when I do it, and that my heart opens, and it includes others. And so I do see this question of race, Sangha, belonging, Buddhism, gathering, as so intimate. It's a very, very deep, intimate question. And it's not separate from any of those things I just said. So that as I search and struggle with my own kind of authentic love and self, it's the same as loving the other, because then it's not other. I have been out for 6 weeks. I had been out for 6 weeks. I'm back, and I'm still in the out mode. I had a surgery. I'm doing fine. And it has that downtime. I have been reading, I call them my tomes, that I don't get to, you know, these thick tomes. And one of the tomes was, let me see if I get it right, Old Path, White Clouds. I a lot of times like to change it around in different ways. I put all the words there, but in different order. And it's Thich Nhat Hanh's Life of Buddha. Okay. Why I decided that that would be one of my I have a few tomes. I have like Cast, you know. I have all these books. But while I was reading it, it's been wonderful. It's a wonderful book. I would definitely recommend it. And some parts of it are hard to understand. There's a lot of lists. But other parts, I'm really interested in Buddhism in the world. And so what I appreciate about it was, how did he struggle with creating his Sangha? You know, he still comes off looking like, oh my God, how do you just, you know, do it on 3 hours of sleep and, you know, meditate all day and then, you know, walk in and you just, everything transforms. But there's an aspect of struggle in there. He has some lines that, you know, Sangha is harmony. That's interesting. And then he talks about how to make the harmonies. It's like, okay, so apparently doesn't start out as harmony. You've got some steps on how to do this. Okay? But there's something to practicing being intimate with all people. very profound. There's one other part where Nanda, who's his person who takes care of him, says, you know, I think being brotherly, this is paraphrasing, being brotherly is like most of the way, you know, that's kind of the main, most of the thing. And then the Buddha looks at him and he goes, yeah, but it's all of it. It is the path of enlightenment. It's the whole thing. And I was like, underline. So if I deal with my intimacy, then can I, in my open heart, bubble it out to you? If you deal with your intimacy, can you bubble it out to me? That's it. That is Sangha dealing with racism. That's it. Can you deal with it intimately? And it will overflow and bubble it out. It will transform. It will break open. Together. It's the same thing. It's the same.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to lean into my bosom?
I do, but maybe more comfortable if I could talk like this the whole time, and that would be fine. You know, we're all friends. I hope you can see we're friends. We really didn't plan so much. We really wanted this to be flow and real. So we resisted the impulse to plan and script and organize and meet again and Zoom it and then rehearse and... and so then it flowed, and so we could flow over, or we could try to keep it within. I think we'd need another hour to do the popcorn thing that we wanted to do. And since we have about 10 minutes, what I'd like to do is invite some thoughts, questions. Maybe we can't see the people on the Zoom, but I wonder if we could see the people on the Zoom. And especially our BIPOC friends on the Zoom, and there's also us people in the room. I wonder if you could offer a thought or a question for us, commentary, praise, anything. More love.
Kyoku.
I'm sorry, but were you asking for the BIPOC people?
Yes, I was asking first for BIPOC people, especially the BIPOC sitting group, who is often on Zoom and doesn't have a chance often to come here, or the BIPOC sitting people in the room.
Didi, what you were saying about intimacy and bubbling up and sharing intimacy, I think it's very hard because to be in that space, you have to be very vulnerable. And life is so harsh that sometimes it's hard to be so vulnerable to everyone. There's this self-protectiveness that we all have for survival, including emotional and spiritual survival. And I see what you're saying, that it is the intimacy that binds us, that we experience spiritual growth and personal growth. But it's really scary. And it could be really, really painful. And trying to deal with the rejection on top of everything else. Those are just my thoughts. Thank you all for listening.
Awesome. Thank you, DT. It's nice to see you there.
I would share an insight that I experienced this morning, I think in response to something that Marcus was saying about belonging and his period at Clouds. I've been a member of a Unitarian Universalist Church for about 30 years, and have always struggled with the sense of belonging there. And I have thought what was significant is, you know, I needed someone to ask me what it was that I needed. But I recognized that there was someone there who asked me what I needed. And I had difficulty simply coming up with the answer. So the inspiration or the insight that I had this morning, at least for me, is what I need, what I needed there. It may be fitting here or not, I don't know, is for someone to say, not ask me to figure out what the answer is, but to say, let us sit down together and figure out what would make you, what would allow you to feel like this was your spiritual home. It's a simple, well, I don't know. It wasn't a simple piece for me to see, for me to fit into the puzzle, but I came up with that this morning and it was significant for me. I have spoken.
We have a raised hand.
Thank you, Michael.
Oh, sorry. We have a raised hand. I don't know this name though. But
can you just show the whole Zoom?
Yeah, let me. Sorry.
I'm
okay.
Hello, Magda.
Good morning. Thank you for organizing this talk. I'm very thankful to all of you. And I want to say, as a person of color who has been part of the Sangha, I'm very thankful to Clouds in the Water. And my personal experience is that when I arrived there, I arrived in emotional pain, and more recently I've been, you know, sick with an illness. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes. So what I'm saying is that I never felt treated differently by anybody in the Sangha because I'm Hispanic. I always experienced kindness and warmth, and that's a quality that I don't know, maybe I have this preconception that Buddhism is love, but that's what I've experienced at Klaus and the Water. And for that, it has been my spiritual home. And I hope to go back and be more participatory. And thank you, all of you, for all your kindness and support to all beings. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. So maybe if you can show the whole Zoom, and then maybe we can also go into the room and see if there's someone who would like to say something, maybe first give space to people of color. Where are you, Jen Retro?
First, I want to say thank you to the lab for all of your dedication and commitment and heart for all of these years. And for your practice even prior to that. I didn't expect to be moved this morning. I didn't, but you have moved me significantly. And I want to pull out a thread that Michael mentioned about a conversation with everybody of what it means to belong. I think that would be really fruitful. And it also makes me think about, sometimes I think it's helpful to do the not. What is it that does not make me feel I belong? I think is also a helpful part of that conversation, if it can be held in the spirit of collective understanding as opposed to kind of personal injury, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so just deep, deep gratitude also to Sosan mm-hmm. and Kla's leadership for nurturing this group and this community.
Good morning. My name's Arlene, and Arlene Kelly, and I've been a member here for quite a while now, on and off. And as a little girl, I was born and I was raised in the South Bronx. My neighbors were mostly from places like Spain, Puerto Rico, a lot of the Hispanic areas, from Germany, from black people who had come from the South because it was the only way. Some of them were getting killed and their families would then be moved up by other black families. And I learned how, with a friend of mine who was a black woman, she helped me, I think, understand a lot of what could I do, where could I belong, and could I be accepted and being accepted. And my family, my mother in particular, also helped, and she was accepted with a Scottish accent, which I wondered with some people if they even understood her. But being a member taught me a great deal about not feeling any kind of, oh, get out of here, you're black, or you're Chinese, or you're Asian, or you're anything else. Mm-hmm. When I married, my husband and I adopted a little girl from Peru. And so I did some of the same kind of thing. When she was getting a little older, when we'd take her out for walks, and sometimes people would look at her like, huh? And say, you know, this is what you have to understand about racism. This is what you have to understand about believing in yourself and believing in other people who are different races too, including the white people like me who don't feel there's anything that I should put between me and anyone else. And that really helped her to come into a different race, be brought up by me in particular, and go to school and have a teacher who just, come on in, you know, there's nothing going on here. We are who we are. And that helped. But it also meant that now she's teaching her original language, which is Spanish, to a grade school, because one of the things that the school wants is people learning languages at very early ages. So grade school and junior high, she's teaching. Mm-hmm. And that's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Arlene. It's nice to hear from you. Yes, please, Roshni.
I've been coming and going a lot, and I stay here probably because of the lab. And I love that it's called the lab. I love that it's an experiment because, oh boy, it's a lot. So, but I've been just floored every time, like how with such great care, it's just been, I mean, we've been going through such difficult times, especially in the last few years. And so, I mean, pylon isolation and like, and feelings of just raw anger altogether. So it's been really amazing. And I feel like I can always come back, and it's been nice. But if anything, it's helped me in other aspects of my life, actually address issues of equity with a seat of love, which is really needed. And I mean, other times I'm just like a fireball who can't handle the injustices. And then I kind of am like, whoa, I need to go back to clouds and water. And I just really appreciate that.
Thank you, Roshini.
The children are at the door.
Okay. Fireballs in our heart can be totally all one thing. So please let's bow to each other and to Roshini. Also to our friends on Zoom and our friends in the room, thank you. It's been really so, there's not even words to say that we're all here together, open not to just rehearse our stories of pain or triumph, but to really open in an unknowing way to what is next. So thank you, and thank you for our teachers in helping us.